What better way to end the year than to talk about one of my favorite subjects, getting butthurt? Getting butthurt actually costs you money and results. Let's think about why. That's this week on the Badass Agile Podcast. Greetings, team. Welcome to the Badass Agile Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Williams. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode. How many people do you know get butthurt at the slightest form of criticism or failure? And wait, are you one of them? Let's learn about this very human impulse and why it costs so much in terms of team effectiveness and what you can do about it. But first, let's remember why we're here. To create an elite tribe of leaders who truly serve their clients and communities by doing what matters and what works. Relentlessly chasing value and excellence like a badass. There's so many resources about what you need to do to be agile, but we focus on who you need to become in order to lead teams. So let's hammer down those fundamentals to create a unique and powerful force in this industry. And if this helps you, tell your friends. Now, more than ever, agile needs a badass. And one of the big barriers to making badass progress is that we're no longer allowed to tell people when they suck. I was recently in a session where I, full disclosure, accidentally took aim at a group of people responsible for providing a service who were notoriously slow at providing that service. And it was a huge pain point for the company. It kept coming up in retrospectives. It kept getting raised as a blocker. And nothing ever got better. The process just took as long as it took. And there was nothing they can do about it. But the reality is that lead time was becoming unserviceable. Now, as it happens, the person responsible for that function was in the room. And his response was, hey, stop picking on me. Here's the thing. The fact that you don't like the sound of it, or that you feel bad about it, or even the fact that there's a really good reason why what you're doing sucks, doesn't change the fact that what you're doing sucks. The fact that we attach so much priority to not offending other people, or that we as individuals attach so much priority to feeling good about ourselves at all times and at all costs, that we can't allow ourselves to admit or accept that we failed, or even that we could improve. That's what prevents us from having our problems get any better. This slowdown cost money, it cost productivity, and it cost market advantage. It kept the company from delivering the value that they wanted to deliver. And behind that is a choice. It was a conscious decision by one or more people to do things a certain way and to refuse to drop any constraints or ways of working, policies or procedures, even though they ran completely counter to the purpose and existence of the business, which is to provide a valuable service in a timely fashion to the people who pay the company's bills. And if you say anything about it, there's always one person who's responsible for that area who stands up and says, wait a minute, and they get defensive, and they provide excuses, and they provide reasons, good reasons. The point is, it was an opportunity to be genuine in a retrospective, to have something really painful pop up and to handle it in the room, to provide open and honest feedback that could, in theory, result in meaningful change. But the problem is, the recipient didn't want to hear it, which creates an environment in which the customer doesn't want to say it. So what happens? Nothing gets better. We go to retrospectives and we talk about meaningless things. Don't microwave fish in the team room. And so nothing will ever get better, because what we've done is create a culture in which when you raise a real pain point, people spend more energy getting offended and upset at the fact that you've called them out on poor performance. Then they are likely to get upset about the fact they're providing terrible service. In my mind, that's completely backwards. If you have failed, that's where you should be focusing your anger, your frustration, your energy. But instead, if you close the books on that inefficiency and still somehow call yourselves a high-performing culture, then you are straight up 100% lying to yourself. Here's another example. I was recently working with a firm where they had a big leadership overhaul. And for the next 6 months, very few decisions or changes got made because they were waiting for the fallout of that leadership change to rain down and settle. And if you look at the reasons and excuses on paper, they're good reasons. Nobody felt comfortable moving the train forward without some sense of direction, without some kind of compass, without some kind of plan. But at the end of the day, those are just reasons. They are just excuses. You just lost 6 months to your competition. That's all. Over and out. Now, if I sound overly critical, we're all guilty of this. But it's something we should all be working so hard to change. Because ultimately, if you want to be agile, people need to be able to bring you feedback about the things that you suck at without you getting all defensive and bent out of shape about it. Because if you refuse to see your own blind spots, you'll never, ever improve. Now, I truly believe that if we were to remove the psychological factors around failure, also known as fear, then we almost wouldn't need agile at all. People would simply be free and courageous to do their best work every time they set foot in the office. So if we agree that this is a perfectly human impulse, but we also agree that it's extremely costly and not desirable, what can we do? Well, there may be tips or tricks I can offer you that would help have these discussions in a way that doesn't offend people, but I think it would be far better to create a culture in which these kinds of conversations are simply welcome and normal, rather than trying to temper our words so that we don't offend people. So the first thing I think you should do if you're a scrum master or coach is coach. You need to tell people that delivering the hard news makes us better. It's far better to create a culture of openness and hard feedback that's not directed at a person and their qualities or their identity, but rather to criticize the outcome that we're getting or the problems that we're experiencing. It may be helpful to soften the words a little bit by saying that this is not a reflection of the person, their capabilities, their characteristics, but rather the processes that we've created as a team, although they serve their purpose and serve their time, sometimes we need to change things. Sometimes we need to evolve, especially because, don't forget, this is a rapidly changing marketplace. So processes that we've created 2 years ago may not be relevant, not because they were bad, but because they haven't changed with the times. That kind of language can help temper the message a little bit. But at the end of the day, the badass leader knows this. There are certain people that are going to get offended no matter what you say. So really trying to smooth out and nicen the message at a certain point won't pay off anymore. What you need to get your teams good at is receiving the criticism and the mental and emotional toughness that goes with it. But if you need some hacks or some tricks that you can try right now to help conversations so you can solve problems in the present, here's some things you can do that might break the pattern of hurting butts when things suck. So let's imagine that there's a check issuing process for invoices, and it's completely digital, but it takes 30 days no matter what. And you want it faster. It's causing pain. Slow payments are crushing your business in every conceivable way. So the first thing you do is put the people who are using the process in the same room with the people who are providing the service. So customers and the check clearing people. Because nothing promotes understanding like face-to-face communication, right? We as agilists know that. So get people to voice their concerns by explaining not how mad they are or how much they think it stinks, but simply explain what happens. How does the process work? What does it look like? How does it feel to be a customer using this service? What are the impacts that the process causes? Now, by the way, give this whole team, customers and providers all in the room together, give them a cool name like the Solution Evolution Brigade or something like that. That'll take the focus off of bashing check clearing processes and make it about simply doing everything we do as an organization better. So take the focus away from pointing at one specific group, one specific process. Now next, let's agree as a team that we could benefit somehow from some kind of change. We don't know what it is yet, but we're open to anything. The reason why you want to keep it open and broad is to get any kind of consensus. Even just pointing at a window and saying, hey everybody, can we agree that that's a window would help, but of course that's meaningless. So at least get everyone to agree that there is something somehow we could do to make this process better. Don't know what it is, because the providers are going to be in the room thinking, I know my users. They're going to say they want stuff faster. And then the users are going to say, I know these guys. They're going to say that they want more controls and better security. So let's bust those things wide open and say, we're not here to talk about faster or more secure. Just what would make this serve the company better? All options are on the table. And once you have that consensus, you can now ask the check clearing team, the people who own the process, why the users can't have what they just said they wanted. So this will be them explaining their requirements effectively. It may start out as a little bit defensive, but ultimately they will get you to a place where we understand why things are the way they are. Remember, they're just reasons. They're probably not good reasons, but they're still reasons. So now you should have the users having explained their dream state, which is their requirements. You have the people who own the process explaining why things are the way they are, which is effectively their requirements. Put all those requirements into a single pile. You can prioritize them if you want to, have each side or each team prioritize their list, but just do it quickly and do it roughly. Because where you want to get to now is everyone brainstorming. And here you have to guide the discussion. What would the world look like, for example, if we could clear checks in 60 seconds? Or another way of asking is, what would happen if the CEO walked in today and said that they wanted a check cut, signed, issued right now? Can you do differently? Would you do differently? Encourage greenfield brainstorming. Do silly things. Talk about childish solutions, things that you know won't work. All of this stuff is good. Now, encourage people to come up with hybrids that check the most important boxes in that prioritized list of requirements that both sides put up on the wall. So here's some things that might come up. What if there were three check clearing processes instead of one? A fast, a medium, and a regular. Or another idea, what if we had a check clearing stand-up once a day to fast track the necessary approvals for most of the checks, and we only put the really risky or complex ones through the full process? What if that stand-up had all of the people who approve checks in the room to sign off on the day's payments right then and there? Because maybe the slowdown is caused by the fact that it goes through a workflow person to person. Maybe we could solve that lag time right now. Or could we write out the approval logic so that other people could participate? So if people are the blocker, let's get more people who are qualified to sign off on a check, empowered and enabled to do so. The point is, come up with lots of ideas, human ideas, technological ideas, anything that could help solve the problem, but insist on a done thing. Don't just leave the room or the session with ideas and next steps. Leave with a prototype process that you commit to going and trying and measuring. See if it makes things better. Yes, see if it goes faster, but see if it ruins the security and the safety that the process was intended to provide in the first place. Now remember, you're going to have to ask leadership to buy in on some risk here, because some checks, frankly, might get missed or screwed up. But a badass knows that this is the cost of experimentation and adaptation that brings about meaningful change, change that makes you better, change that makes you more competitive. These kinds of steps can take the focus off people and fault in a flawed system and put it back on the customer need where it belongs and rapid ideation and solutioning to make it better. Want some inspiration to help stay sharp and reinforce the badass agile mindset and practices? Stop in every weekday. Grab the latest iteration of my new book. You can go to badassagile.com and subscribe to get the coming week's pages right in your inbox, or check it out at medium.com. Just search for the working title, Field Notes for the Agile Leader. Folks, thank you for listening. You can reach out at badassagile.com or find me on Twitter at badass_agile. I'll see you next time. And until then, stay badass.